Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Good morning and welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. This is hour two for a Tuesday morning on the 8th of January. And because it's Tuesday, that means that one of our great friends of the program, Nicole Phillips, who writes a lot and speaks a lot and blogs a lot about kindness, will join us and give us a quick story of kindness to inspire us for the week. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning. How are you doing today, Peter?
Well, I'm doing well. I'm curious, are people still kind in 2019? Is this a deal still, Nicole?
Hey, I think that this kindness thing is going to take off. I do. I think it's here to stay, kind of like the internet, you know?
I love it. Well, do you have a story for us this morning to kind of just fix our eyes on some ways in which we can be kind to each other?
Yeah. I could give you a long list of to-dos, like a calendar full of things to do to be kind. But I think it's most fun when you just see kindness right where you're at. Lots of people are purging out things from their closets right now, old toys, old, you know, clothes. And I have a friend who's doing that. She had 6 bags of stuff to take to the thrift store. And she went through McDonald's to get some lunch first. Well, she had to wait about, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 minutes in line at McDonald's, which is unheard of. And when it was finally her turn and she got up there after this long wait, she said the woman at the register looked scared, almost as if she was going to say something mean or yell at her or something. And she said she just felt so bad for this woman who was working, who just looked defeated and fearful of her. And so the woman gave my friend her meal, and my friend turned around and she grabbed a designer purse still with the tags on that she had gotten, you know, 5 years ago and was sitting in her closet. She was going to give it away to the thrift shop. She grabbed it and she handed it to the woman and she said, "I just want you to have this today." And she said the woman was just stunned, didn't even know what to say, and was so touched that my friend Sarah would think of her that way. And you know, maybe you don't have bags full of stuff to go to the thrift store when you're going through the drive-through or seeing somebody for the first time, but you always have a word of encouragement to give them. You always have something, even when you feel like you're lacking in so many areas. There's always something to give to another person.
I love that, Nicole. There's just a sense in which if we start our day thinking about kindness, it's amazing the short opportunities we might get just for that word of encouragement.
Right. We will see it if we have our eyes looking for it, for sure.
Well, thanks for joining us as you do on Faith Radio Mornings with these great stories. Remind our listeners where they can go if they want to read more stories and catch more information about kindness like this.
Braveandkind.net. But if I'm allowed to tell you, we're starting a Facebook kindness contest today, and somebody can win a book. One a week, I think, for the next month. The kindness team has taken over my Facebook page at Nicole J. Phillips.
I love that. So listeners can just go to Facebook and interact there and have a chance to win a book.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love it. Well, happy 2019, Nicole. Great to hear your voice again, and thanks for joining us on Faith Radio Mornings.
Have a great one. Bye-bye, Peter.
Up next, we'll be joined by Dr. David Stevens, and we'll talk about some of the medical issues of the day, including the influence of religious upbringing on adolescents. So more to come here in Hour 2 of Faith Radio Mornings. The walk-up music for Dr. David Stevens, who joins us regularly on Faith Radio Mornings to just think through so many of the issues facing us as family, as maybe grandparents, as people that are aging, younger people, any number of health issues, and he does so from a Christian standpoint. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing well. Love having you on the program, David. Great to hear your voice again here in 2019. Did you have a good holiday?
We did. Not much family. Two of our children are overseas as missionaries, but we had a good time. My brother came by, and just wonderful time and restoration, renewal, and getting some rest, and looking forward to a new year that we're now into.
It's such a different time, isn't it, for so many of us, David, whether it's for missions work or some sort of occupational reason. So many of our young people are able, because of the sort of increase in mobilization these days, to live overseas. And that leaves parents and grandparents in tricky situations about how they want to spend their holidays and how much travel they'll do.
Yeah, well, we had one in Africa and one in the Middle East, so, you know, kind of difficult to travel there. You try to, you know, make a FaceTime call or something and try to get through with that and keep the family fires burning. But that's the greatest sacrifice of missionary service in your family. And I kind of chuckle because we did it to my parents, and now our kids are doing it to us. So we're looking forward. We're going to be actually visiting our daughter in the Middle East in February on a trip that I'm making. So that'll be wonderful fun, and family times are important, and we want to invest in them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, lots to get to with you this morning. I'm excited about some of these topics, not least of which has to do with the impact of growing up in a religious or faith household and what it has, the kind of impact it has on adolescents. And I know, Dr. Stevens, so many parents feel paralyzed about what to do with kids. The questions are profound and complex, whether they're biological or sociological or spiritual. There's a lot there. But just it sounds like to me from the stats that the simple fact of growing up in a faith household really helps in so many of these situations.
It does. I actually sat down this week and spoke with Tyler Vanderweel, who's an epidemiologist at Harvard School of Public Health. That's one of the top institutions in the world. And they just completed a study and published it, which I thought was extremely interesting and very well done. They actually followed over 5,000 adolescents. That's a huge study. Over 8 years, and look to see the impact of being raised in a religious and spiritual environment, and found out that it had profound impact on these kids' behavior. And I think that's good news for all of us that are faith-based and trying to raise our kids that way. I know when I was growing up, Peter, and you're probably the same way, you felt like you were in church all the time or in Sunday school or the youth group or whatever. But that's actually excellent for your kids and protects them and also helps them in their development in all areas of their life.
We were talking last hour with Gregory Yao of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship about the Urbana Conference, David, and what you just referenced is one of the themes we sort of picked up on is that in my life in church, and it was Wednesdays, it was Sundays, it was meals with people, it was sometimes Saturdays, there's retreats. My life really did revolve around what was going on in church, but I'll say this, I felt part of a bigger story, that there was something out there bigger than myself and my own dreams and desires, and I think that kind of idea can go a long ways towards just some of the depression and anxiety and loneliness that so many of our young people feel.
Yeah, well, what they looked at was less negative outcomes and more positive outcomes. And they found that those that were in religious services regularly, and that's just how they quantified it, had a 12% less likely chance of having high depressive symptoms, 33% less likely chance of using illicit drugs. If they prayed and meditated frequently, which is a deeper level of spiritual commitment, there's a 30% less likely to start having sex at a young age, 40% less likely to subsequently have a sexually transmitted disease. This is powerful information. In fact, I was sharing it with our 20,000 healthcare professionals in our organization, saying this is a way to raise this topic with parents. Because increasingly people, you know, I don't know if we can get to church on Sunday, and you know, it's a lot of effort and that type of thing, and don't realize the tremendous impact that just even that has. But if you go to the next level where you're having actually looking at the positive outcomes, it's even greater. 87% more likely to have high levels of forgiveness, 18% more likely to be happy, 38% more likely to volunteer in their community, 47% more likely to have a high sense of mission and purpose. So this is huge impact from something that we all should be doing anyway.
And Dr. Stevens, as we think about getting our kids involved in these ways that you describe, Rachel Sutton, one of our producers of the show, was just typing over a question. In terms of thinking about protecting versus maybe sheltering our kids, it's one of those ideas that I know we as a homeschool family wrestle with a little bit about what is the line between protecting them and not exposing them unduly to certain kinds of ideas and thoughts at an early age and then simply sheltering them. Do I need to let them out of the house more than one day a year like we're currently doing?
I, I think so, too, but in the right environment. You know, I often get in the conversation with people about homeschooling or a Christian higher education versus secular, and it's so more expensive and all that rest. I've not talked to anybody that has regretted making those type of investments of time and finances in their children. That doesn't mean you don't let them out, as you're joking, you know, more than one day a year. You have them out, you get them socialized and whatever. But if you want your children to act like all other kids, then you put them with those kids all the time. Or if you want them to instill in them behavior that you think is God-honoring, then you spend the time with them. And yes, they have social times, but they're getting the greatest influence. One of the things they found in this study was that having other adults in their lives, other Christian adults in their lives, had impact on them like their parents did as well. So it's not a matter of isolating them. It's a matter of making sure they're having those positive influences and examples in their life from you as well as other people older than they are and more mature in their faith.
Well, Dr. Stevens, too, in terms of having this, the exposure to older people, some of that takes some time where we just have the time in life. And I don't know about what you're experiencing with families with whom you work, but there certainly seems to be this hamster wheel that so many of us as families are running on day in and day out. And if you want to sign up for something like soccer, suddenly soccer demands your life 24/7. Or if you sign up for some sort of musical instrument, it's the same sort of thing. And is it possible to do the hamster wheel and live the kind of life you're describing, or are these almost mutually exclusive decisions?
I don't think they're mutually exclusive, but even good things can be done too much.
Yeah.
And, you know, I advise parents when I'm talking to them, you know, one sport per child, maybe two. Don't start doing so many things that you're just running to thing, because it becomes wears you out and wears the kids out and damages relationships. You need time doing activities together. Yes, we want our kids to be well-rounded, well-developed, develop their talents, but we need to do it not to the extreme. And we see that because of the competitive nature of parents in our country to say, well, look at all my kids are doing, you know, that type of thing.
Love hearing some perspective on that. This is Dr. David Stevens, joins us regularly on Faith Radio Mornings from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. And after we come back in just a moment, Dr. Stevens, I would love to talk about your perspective of the best overall diets for 2019. I know I could use some advice on that matter. Some more to come on Faith Radio Mornings. It is the 8th of January, and it's about 20 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and we are joined by Dr. David Stevens, just addressing so many of the different medical topics of the day and how they impact us as families. And Dr. Stevens, of course, 2019 represents the start of many New Year's resolutions, and I would suspect that diets are on the top of the list for many of us. And can you give us a sense of the best diets in which we can engage? Because I hear things like you should only eat meat, avoid all carbs, avoid all gluten, avoid all sugar, avoid all this, that. Pretty soon, I'm on a coffee only diet, Dr. Stevens.
Well, you have to worry about that too if you take too much, right? It's you get your caffeine high. Actually, there was an interesting article in U.S. News and World Report where they put together a set of health experts, and I agree with what they decided on. You want to look at diets that are safe, that they're relatively easy to follow, or you aren't going to stay on them in the long run. They have to be nutritious, effective for weight loss, and help prevent heart disease and diabetes. And the one that ranked the best would be the Mediterranean diet. And it's called that because it's a common diet in the Mediterranean area. I'll be going to Greece in February, taking a group of people over there. And you see how people eat. It's rich in fruits, vegetables, fish, whole grains, healthy fats like olive oil, nuts, avocados. And it's been proven very clearly to reduce heart disease, reduce your LDL, bad cholesterol, decreases the risk of Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, cancer, a lot of studies on that, and even a 25% lower chance of death. Now, this isn't so much I'm going on a diet. This is I'm going to change to a different diet, and this is the type of things I'm going to eat. Secondly, is the one you often get in the hospital, and it's called the DASH diet, dietary approaches to stop hypertension. and is given to help manage blood pressure, but it's good for just a general diet, including lots of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, skinless poultry, fish, nuts, legumes, and limiting red meat, salt, and sweets. So that's pretty basic. Those would be the two top ones. Now, some of the ones that came in low ranking were the keto diet, the Whole 30 diet, the Dukane diet. They tend to leave out important food groups. They're difficult to follow. They're kind of, I'm going to crash diet and get, the result I want and do this yo-yo thing that people often do, getting weight off, and then before you know it, they've got it back on again.
Well, it's interesting to think about maybe just transferring the way that we eat as opposed to the sort of the constant abstinence from eating that doesn't seem to be sustainable. So suggesting that a Mediterranean diet just as a way of adjusting the kind of food we eat versus just always saying, well, I'm only going to eat one thing a day.
Yeah. That's absolutely true. And it just doesn't last. Weight Watchers was actually number four. Some people need that discipline and accountability, and they recommend good food. They have some new things called a freestyle program that they're doing now. And my wife's done that before and stayed with it for a long matter of time. It became just kind of a lifestyle for her. But the accountability, the weigh-ins, those type of things, it can be very helpful for people, writing down what you're eating so you don't, cheat and, well, I'll just take a little bit more of this or I'll have some of that tonight. The accountability can be very important as well, and I think Weight Watchers, that's one of their advantages.
So does all this mean that I can officially rip up my old school USDA food pyramid, Dr. Stevens, that I have on my steering wheel and kind of check off the list and make sure I got them all?
Yeah, I like to see that on your steering wheel. Can I drop by? It's hard to do that. The food pyramid's hard to follow. I mean, I know it's been around forever, but simple is good. And learning the type of things you can eat and then just putting those in your refrigerator and getting the habit and doing it with someone else can make a huge difference in the long run. And don't try to lose a lot of weight in 1 month or 1 week or whatever. I'm going to move my life to a different type of diet and do that for my family as well. And we'll be healthier and have less heart disease and a lot of other problems that can come from bad diets.
Well, that's super helpful advice. And, of course, some of the problems that we do end up with in life at different times, a lot of people end up taking some prescription drugs and even some generic drugs around this. And we've seen some changes in that field as we start 2019, quite a price increase that was put into play.
Yeah, bad news. The average price increase for medicines, looking at over 1,000 different medications, about 6%, and some as high as 9% or even higher than that. And we just are pricing ourselves out of the ability to pay for drugs, especially the uninsured. They're the ones that get the full rack rate on cost on drugs. Drug companies negotiate prices and still pay a lot of money. But if you don't have insurance, these drugs just get very prohibitive. I've said on the show before, my wife has rheumatoid arthritis. She's on a medication that costs about $1,000 a week if we didn't have insurance and still pay a lot of money in copays. So, yes, it's important to find new drugs, but some of the drugs have been around forever. You know, one of the highest price increases this year is in insulin. Insulin is a drug that's over 100 years old. And what they've done is messed with the formula a little bit. It's a little longer acting or that type of thing. And prices are going up 148% on insulin on metformin, which is another drug. And it's going up on insulin as well. So this is a big problem. The administration's trying to deal with it, but something needs to happen because the path we're on is unsustainable and it's hurting people. People don't take their drugs because they can't afford them, even though they desperately need them.
And, of course, the insurance companies are not exactly known to be driven by benevolence. And so some of these sorts of price increases we're going to see in premiums and other – somebody's going to have to pay for it somewhere along the line.
Oh, they do. They pass them on. And we celebrated here at CMDA that we only had an 8% increase in our premiums for insurance for our staff because it's been 20-25% a year. And it's gotten to where we've had to increase copays and all that type of thing. The cost of health care is completely out of control. And we're on a trajectory which is unsustainable. It's one of the greatest concerns I have, and something's going to have to happen because the system's going to break.
Now, Dr. Stevens, are there ways that you can suggest for people to reduce some of the cost, if at all possible, in terms of just being able to fill these prescriptions, or is it pretty much just a rock and a hard place at this point?
Well, insurance is important because they do negotiate rates. Get generics. Always ask for generic drugs. There's only two or three drugs where getting the trade brand is important. One of those is thyroid medication, Synthroid. But the vast majority generic is good. Oftentimes, the extended release when they develop a new drug and then get it out there, when the patent begins to run out, they come out with an extended release, which is more convenient but often much more expensive. So watch out for those kind of traps, and talk to your doctor when he's offering, here's what I think you need to take. Say, is that the cheapest form? Is there something else that's more reasonably priced? Don't hesitate to mention that, because the impact is significant over a lifetime, especially on chronic drugs.
Well, we certainly love your perspective and wisdom on Faith Radio Mornings and what you bring to the table. I know our listeners respond so favorably to all the advice. So thanks for taking the time to do this, Dr. Stevens, and I wish you a really happy 2019 ahead.
God bless, Peter.
We'll take a break here for some Breakpoint, maybe a little bottom of the hour news. When we come back, we'll be joined by one of our favorites, Bruce Ashford. And Bruce and I will talk about whether there is even a little bit of demonic activity happening in politics. It's an article he's been working on. So lots to come with Bruce Ashford on Faith Radio Mornings. Well, I suppose from the file of You Can't Make This Stuff Up, I read this morning that an upcoming DC Comics series will feature the ultimate superhero, Jesus. CBR.com says the DC Comics imprint DC Vertigo will introduce Christ as a superhero in the new series Second Coming. In the series, Jesus will be teamed with Sun Man. The first issue of the series is expected to go on sale on March 6th. All I can say is, oh dear. Yesterday, Brandon Showalter from the Christian Post joined us on Faith Radio Mornings, and he was talking about a very disturbing story about how puberty-blocking drugs are being given to gender-confused children.
One of the things that I think might break the ice is when you try to talk to people about it, is lead with your own story. And, you know, everybody's got issues, and everybody has brokenness in their life. We have struggles, and I think if we can be the ones that can be the first people to let our own guards down, it really paves the way for greater conversations about these tough topics. I've, you know, prayed with people who've dealt with gender confusion. It's a very real and torturous thing, and you know, wouldn't wish it on anybody. I'm sure the suffering is just great, but, you know, so I'd say to your question, just be the first one to let your guard down. Be the one to be transparent, vulnerable, and share from the heart, and let that be the springboard from which you start to talk about why we believe as we do, particularly on these sensitive issues.
Love having Brandon on the program talking about some of the news topics of the day from a Christian standpoint. And Brandon will actually be on Carmen LaBurge's show on Connecting Faith at 12:15 Central Time this afternoon. So if you want to hear more about what Brandon had to say on this topic and others, join Carmen this afternoon. And you can also go to myfaithradio.com and hear all of what he had to say on Faith Radio Mornings yesterday. We've already been chatting with Dr. Bruce Ashford from Southeastern Baptist Seminary, and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the forces at play in American democracy. And I need to ask Bruce as well about his perspective about Jesus as a comic book hero.
There's a natural progression that flows in the parenting process, and it's a good thing. God designed it that way. The problem comes when mom and dad get stuck and fail to move on. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. When kids are young, we please them. In grade school, we protect them. And in middle school, we provide for them. In high school and beyond, we need to prepare them. It's unfortunate, however, when moms and dads get stuck in the pleasing, protecting, and providing stages and fail to prepare their kids for the world. This oversight can actually stunt your teen's growth. When you forestall independence, it only leads to an entitled young adult who continually makes irresponsible choices. Follow the God-given pattern for parenting.
Looking for more parenting wisdom? Go online to ParentingTodaysTeens.org or search for Parenting Today's Teens in your favorite app store.
And And now welcome to the jungle. Music from Guns N' Roses means that Bruce Ashford is joining us to help us think through life in the jungle. That is our country. That is our faith and the intersection of these two things. Bruce is provost, dean of faculty, and professor of theology and culture at Southeastern Baptist Seminary. And Bruce, you're on sabbatical from what I understand. I assume sabbatical for you means just sort of sitting back, getting up when you feel like it, eating some bonbons as they come. Not much to do, right?
Yeah, something like that. It's an intensive research and writing leave. So I'm writing a book on the doctrine of creation. I'm writing a worldview text. I'm writing a book on war, and also a book on the Ten Commandments and how they can help us sort out the social, cultural, political issues here in America.
Well, how do you do that in such a short period of time? Do you ping back and forth between some of these different texts? Do you try to focus on one, or what's the strategy?
I'm working on three of them at the same time right now. I tend to get up and work on the one that I feel like working on, because when you feel like working on something, you're usually more productive.
Yeah, so that makes a ton of sense. I love it. Well, I do have to ask you before we get into our main topic of the morning is I was a little disturbed by this headline to see that the next superhero in DC Comics is Jesus. How am I processing this, Bruce? This feels like a jungle to me.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure it's well-intentioned. You know, somebody's, you know, wants to be relevant and says, hey, let's make a comic book and make Jesus the hero instead of, you know, Batman or Superman or something like that. But, you know, I think you just don't want to make a gimmick out of Jesus. You know, I think it just unintentionally belittles him, makes him small instead of making him big. So, you know, I want to dismiss the intentions of the person that made it, but I think it's a bad move.
Yeah, it seems like a bit of publicity at this point. I mean, we know that the DC and the Marvel franchises, they do a good job making a lot of money, and it could be potentially troubling, the idea that we use our savior in that vein.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder what they're going to do with him. I'm sure he won't be saving people from their sins. I mean, can imagine a comic book company thinking that that's going to sell.
Yeah.
You know, for their audience.
Absolutely. Well, lots to get into. I know this morning you have a pretty interesting article that you released, been working on for a bit, just about ideas of authoritarianism, totalitarianism, American democracy, and even the idea of some spiritual reality within all of this. So just tell us about this article, Bruce, that you've been working on.
Yeah, so there's a book written by a man named Rizard Legutko. Great name, huh?
Yeah,
and
great name.
This guy's a fascinating guy. He's a political philosopher, but he served in a number of different ways in the Polish government, and he's also served in the European Union, and he's very disturbed by what's going on in Europe. And what he does, since he grew up under communism in Poland, and now he's a member of European Parliament in a liberal democratic continent in Europe, he's saying, listen, there's some parallels. Now, it's not as bad in Europe, he said, now, as it was during the communist days. You don't have concentration camps killing tens of millions of people. But he said there's some troubling comparisons that can be drawn between the communists and between left-leaning democratic countries in the European Union.
And with some of those parallels, what is maybe most troubling about them? Is it a sense in which that we can be just ruled from a secular standpoint, that there doesn't have to be any faith in the midst of this? Or how do we understand some of the troubling dimensions of it?
Yeah, good point. I mean, so there's five categories that he gives. We could walk through them, each one in a couple of minutes. Does that work?
Yeah. Why don't you give us the first two here that we can reference?
Okay. Yeah. So the first one is he said that communists and left-leaning liberal Democrats have a very similar view of history. They are very skeptical about the past and very optimistic about the future. They're sure, absolutely sure, that they're on the right side of history, and they will punish anybody who stops them from achieving their agenda. And so theologically, I'm a Christian theologian, I would say there's a bad view of humanity here and of history. And the view is this, that human beings are essentially good rather than evil. And if you can just bring in a good system instead of a bad system, then everybody's going to flourish, all right? And so they don't recognize that evil actually comes from within. I don't know if you've seen the movie The Village, came out about 10 years ago. Fantastic movie about a group of people that moved out in the middle of the woods to start over again so they could get away from evil. But then somebody murders somebody within that community, and they come to the realization that actually evil comes from within. Mm. And I think that's one point that I would want to make back against the left-leaning liberal Democrats and the communists. Second category is utopia, that both communism and liberal democracy claim that the full implementation of their political principles will bring universal flourishing and harmony. So this is really a false view of the end times. This is a non-religious eschatology. If you've heard the word eschatology, for those of you out there listening, I mean, when we talk about eschatology, we're talking about the Bible's view of what will happen in the end. Secular political parties and movements usually have their own eschatologies, and those eschatologies don't include God. It doesn't include God's action. It includes bringing a final solution, a utopia, a time of universal human flourishing by means of political action and political ideologies. I can read a couple of his quotes if we have a couple of minutes.
Yeah, I would love actually to let's just comment on that for a second though, because I think it's such an important point that you make. I think there's a subtlety, Bruce, that there's a difference between what I read in the scriptures and what I see kind of pervading many Christian, Jewish, other religious strains these days. And that is my understanding from the biblical text, is that things are actually going to spiral and get worse and worse and worse and darker, thus the need for a renewal and a second kind of coming. But I do see some theological underpinnings to some Christian and Jewish movements today, that if we can just do the right thing, live in harmony, that we will usher in ourselves this age of peace.
Yeah, and you know, we can't. That's always the lie that the evil one tells. I mean, he told that lie to Adam and Eve. He questioned God's word and their need for God, told them to depend on themselves. And then even now, today, we still want to be able to depend on ourselves. And so these, you know, both of these types of political movements and they're trying to achieve their utopia are going to find a way to present dissenters as sinners. Okay. They're not just people who disagree with our project, but they're committing monstrous sins that will tarnish or derail the most precious achievement in the entire history of humanity. And they find it difficult to believe that anybody who is not stupid or bad doesn't agree with them.
Hmm. Yeah.
It makes things so vitriolic, right?
It really does.
People who don't disagree with you are fools or evil people rather than just people who disagree. You're going to have a nasty political situation on your hands.
Yeah, certainly so much of what we see today. As we head into break, Bruce, why don't you give us one of those quotes from one of these first two categories? They're fascinating to read.
Yeah, he says both communism and liberal democracy are perceived as having no alternatives. There's no other option. The communists would say if communism is rejected or prevented, society will continue to be subjected to class exploitation, capitalism, and other evils. The liberal democrats would say if liberal democracy is not accepted, society will fall prey to authoritarianism, fascism, and theocracy.
And it's just, yeah, I mean, what an important point, I think, for those of us that are troubled by what we see even on Twitter out of Washington, D.C., so much of what's on there is underpinned by these kinds of ideas. And if you're listening this morning, highly recommend going to BruceAshford.net, where we see his site, Christianity for the Common Good, in which Bruce walks us through so many of these issues. And when we come back, Bruce, more to get to. There's three more parts of this, but it's such an important point that we can't solve spiritual ills through political means only. So more to come with Bruce Ashford on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 9 minutes before the top of the hour, and we're chatting with our friend Bruce Ashford this morning, talking about the role of communism and liberal democracy and the impact it's having on so much of our thinking as we think about social progress and moving forward, and even sort of this anti-religious bent. And Bruce, it's a fascinating article you have here on BruceAshford.net, and there's a few more dimensions of this. Why don't you walk us through a little bit more about how we see that maybe communism and liberal democracy aren't as helpful as we might think?
Yeah, so, you know, our first two categories were history and utopia, and we argued that both the communists and the liberal democrats, especially in Europe, have a view of history and of utopia in which human beings can usher in sort of the end times, and we can do it through politics, which brings us to our third category, which is politics. And what Legutko argues is that both the communists and the liberal democrats politicize everything. They reduce culture to politics, and they think that politics is the only change agent. So as we know, I think when you take a look at patterns in history and patterns in scripture, the culture is much bigger than politics, right? Culture includes the arts, the sciences, education, family, businesses, all of these different things. But in today's progressive politics, especially, and in communism, what you see is everything's politicized, because then you can do it efficiently. If you have a vision for utopia, if you're going to make history better, then you use the strong arm of politics to do so. And so what I would come back and say as a Christian is we would say, listen, no, according to the scriptures, you don't want to reduce culture to politics. God's created a world that's much broader and much better than that, than merely a political world. And what we want to do is take the broad view. We want to persuade people rather than forcing conformity. And so we want to teach them in our families, in our schools, especially private education. Private education is something that can't be controlled by the government. And public education can become just another political arm of the state. In communism, it did. And in Europe, it's become that. So that's a third is politics. The fourth is ideology. All right. So both are heavily ideological. Legutko knows this. He grew up under communism, just to remind those of you out there in radio land. And now he's a member of the European Union, the European Parliament. And he says, listen, what you've got here is you've got these ideologies that purport to explain everything in the world, that have a utopia that they're going to achieve. For the European Union, it's a globalized world where there's no borders and, you know, utopia is brought by educating people to be more accepting and more tolerant of everyone in the world. For communists, it was something different. But the way they apply their ideology is very similar. Indoctrination in a public school system that children are forced to go to, politically correct views being enforced, language being policed, not allowed to use certain words, you have to use other ones. There's a dislike and even a hatred for society's mediating institutions. Mediating institutions, I mean churches, nuclear family unit, scared to death of the family unit and of the church. Because those are two institutions in society that are a bulwark against the state, sort of totalizing everything. So as a Christian, we would come back and say that we don't like ideologies. Ideologies are in competition with religion. They're in competition with Christianity. Ideologies purport to explain everything in the world. And as Christians, we believe that the Bible is the only true story of the whole world. And so basically, I would say we need to get out there and persuade people. We need to win people to the faith. We need to teach them the scriptures so that they can be strengthened against ideologies.
Yeah, Bruce, relative to that, on that piece of it, there is a sense in which, and I know it's one of the points here too, is that religion and family is not just seen as something that can live in tension with government and society in these kind of worldviews. There really is a movement away saying that family and religious structures are getting in the way so often of the social progress that we desire.
Oh, yeah. I mean, basically, in communism, there was an overt attack on religion and sometimes an overt attack on family. In the West and in Europe, it's more of an indirect attack, but it's been more effective, actually, in neutering religion. Because in the communist, and this actually brings us to the fifth category, in the communist era, I mean, they killed tens of millions of Christians, put them in concentration camps, forced labor, torture, starvation. So it was a direct attack on religion. And the Eastern Orthodox Church, the Russian Orthodox Church, was just served as a submissive inferior to the state and did what the state wanted. But you had underground churches that were a strong bulwark of resistance, Baptist and Pentecostal churches especially, that met in apartments and underground and strengthened people's faith. In the West, it's a little bit different. That religion is attacked indirectly by privatizing religion. What the West says is you can have your religion, but we want you to whisper about it in your home, right, and in your churches and keep it out of the public square. And Western Christians have effectively bought into this and are now we are cowed and intimidated and don't even quite know how to enter into public debate and persuade people. And so what we end up having is either Christians who privatize their religion and don't bring it in public, or many Christians who bring it in public but don't know how to do so effectively and just end up, you know, shouting other people down and, you know, using secular and ungodly means of discourse and debate. I want to read a quote. Do we have 1 minute left?
Yeah, we can wrap it up right with that, Bruce. That sounds great.
Yeah, so Legutko says that the communists of the old days would be very jealous of the secular Europeans of today. He says this: if the old communists lived long enough to see the world today, they would be devastated by the contrast between how they, the communists, had managed, how little they, the communists, had managed to achieve in their anti-religious war, and how successful the liberal Democrats have been. All the objectives the communists set for themselves, and which they pursued with savage brutality, were achieved by the liberal Democrats almost without any effort, simply allowing people to drift along with the flow of modernity. And so I think that's he says that he holds out hope for America, but that he doesn't hold out hope for Europe. And so for those of us listening, I think most of us are Americans. We live here in the States. I mean, I think my encouragement would be for us to, if we really believe what we say we believe, for us to get on our knees and to pray for God to act in our country, for the good of the people of this country, and then also for us to venture out into the public square, whether it's by Facebook or a coffee shop conversation or whatever, and to represent the Lord well.
Yeah, Bruce, I just think it's such an important insight, and I love this article. Again, if you're listening this morning, if you want to understand so much of what's happening in our country, this is a great article to explain the underpinnings. It's at BruceAshford.net. Bruce, great to hear your voice, and have a great week. And we'll wrap up our time here on Faith Radio Mornings. Thanks for listening here on the 8th of January. Wish you nothing but hope and future today as we fix our eyes on Jesus together.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.